Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
This is Too Many Minutes, a One Heat Minute Productions podcast miniseries cracking the code of Phil Alden Robinson's 1992 tech caper, Sneakers. To decode this evergreen, era-bridging, infinitely rewatchable masterpiece, we're splitting the film into its component parts, much like its multi-generational ensemble cast for the ages. Since seeing Sneakers in cinemas all the way back in 1992, I've been trying to deconstruct the alchemy. Why does every single element harmonize so perfectly? Is it the score, the compositions, the performances, the script, the setting, the subject, the actors? After 32 years, I finally cracked it. I found Janus's little black box.
Don't look. Listen.
The addition of each new cast member, each new voice, each new tone, what's on the page doesn't just bring them together. Rather, it becomes the framework to support what all these actors mean then and mean now to movie lovers across the decades. Phil Alden Robinson becomes a music producer as much as a director, remixing and sampling these performances, turning up the volume on their very specific music. This is a supergroup, so let's dig in and see how each bar, each sample, makes Sneakers a best of album at the jump. In episode 3, you're going to hear from author, screenwriter, and podcaster Lee Zachariah. You're going to hear from film historian, critic, writer for TCM and co-host of the Cine Historians podcast, Raquel Stecher. And you're going to hear from culture critic and film critic, Craig Uncle Krizzle Lindsay. And with another episode, long overdue, of Too Many Minutes, I just have to say, you get all the fun stuff. Let's start with Craig Lindsay, who first has a couple of notes about my thesis.
Yeah, it's funny because I did listen to the first episode and have that Arizona Tribe Called Quest, and I've been listening. I listened to the episode, but I've been actually reading their two De La Soul books.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Well, now there's one De La Soul book out now, and there's one coming out in November. And I actually, I just got through reading this one.
Oh, great.
by Dave Heaton, and he just talks about how, that whole time back then, of course, when De La Soul started, that kind of led the way to the native tongues, which included the Tribe Called Quest, Moni Love, Queen Latifah. I mean, Busta Rhymes and the Leaders of the New School. It was just like this whole crew. It kind of like, it's funny because like they had native tongues, which was kind of a thing, but wasn't.
Yes.
For the whole crew, but there was never like a big, like, crew thing, like an album or a tour, kind of like, Kendrick Lamar had with Black Hippie and all that stuff, but that's a whole story. But yeah, that's just, when you bring up A Tribe Called Quest, you got to bring up De La Soul, especially in the first album, 3 Feet High and Rising, which they did with Prince Paul, and together they kind of created this sound that was conceived with a lot of samples. And just like, it's kind of funny because like it's 99 hours that year where they had 3 Feet High and Rising, and then a few months later they had a Paul's Boutique, the Beastie Boys, and of course they collaborated with the Dust Brothers, and they had their little album / beat collage, which was made up of different sounds and loops and beats. And so, of course, that was the whole time when people started realizing, hey, they're stealing our shit. Maybe we should. and that's when the Turtles got in with De La Soul too. If you want, take it back even further. I know Tribe is the more, I guess, hipper of the Native Tongues collective. They did Low End Theory and Midnight Marauders, and Q-Tip just produced the LL Cool J. And just Q-Tip is this always this cool elusive figure that dated Nicole Kidman once, but but I often like go back to De La Soul because they like started the whole thing, and they. Prince Paul. I've always been a big Prince Paul. I interviewed him once. So, like, if you're gonna put Tribe in there, you're gonna have to put, De La also in that collective of people.
3. That's a magic number. Yes, 3. It is. It's the magic number. 3. Somewhere in this hip hop soul community. Was born 3, makes love in me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music.
So after sharing his in-depth knowledge, clearly, of the lineages of hip-hop, I asked Craig, well, if I'm going to name this episode after Sidney Poitier, what song's that going to be?
When you think of Curtis Mayfield, of course, you always, especially in terms of Black Exploitation soundtracks, you go to Superfly and Sidney Poitier, for so long he was the coolest brother on the block, and you can think of Superfly or Pusher Man in terms of just having him. Just makes me think of, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, where like some, like, at their own theme music. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he would have approved of that, but you could have played Superfly or Pusher Man as his theme music.
Raquel Stecher and then Craig Lindsay trying to unpack the impact of one Sidney Poitier on the culture and on the industry.
So the first time I ever saw Sidney Poitier on film, I fell in love with him. I just thought, here is the most beautiful, elegant, talented man. There was a sophistication to him, but also this warmth that really drew me in. And the first movie I'd ever watched of his was A Patch of Blue from 1965, where he plays this very empathetic character who takes pity on this young blind woman who's being very mistreated by her mother, played by Shelley Winters, who went on to get an Oscar for her role. And I was just really in love with him. And I've heard from a lot of other Poitier fans who said, when I watched that movie, he's just so romantic and caring. He's the green flag sort of guy that you want in your life. So that was my introduction to him. And then as I started watching his movies, he was just really captivating. Something about his charisma and screen presence and how he really paved the way for Black entertainers at the time. And just some of his movies are some of the most important movies in film history. Like In the Heat of the Night is just groundbreaking and, you know, shocking. And it just really opened doors for lots of discussions. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, also a iconic movie from that era. You know, and a lot of people talk about To Sir with Love and a lot of his other movies. He's the first, you know, best actor winner who, like, first Black actor to win the Best Actor Oscar for Lilies of the Field, which is also another very charming movie of his where he really draws you in with his own brand of charm.
Yes.
I want to say. And then when I started doing more research on him and finding out how important he was, but also his kind of really spectacular journey from being this, you know, this boy in the Bahamas to being this teenager in Florida and kind of opening up this whole world of possibilities and really going for it, to being this young actor in his 20s, really like breaking into film in kind of an unexpected way. And it's just, his film journey is just so interesting. So I was lured in by his charm and then just the fact that he was such an interesting person and his effect on film history, it just kind of went from there. When he was working in the 50s, he was very much a supporting actor, but he was a supporting actor with a very strong screen presence, and he had a lot of really interesting roles. He wasn't playing very small parts. Like in his very first movie, No Way Out, he's pretty much opposite the star Richard Widmark. Yeah. And throughout the 50s, he sort of paired with these big leading men. Like he's in Blackboard Jungle with Glenn Ford, and he's in Something of Value with Rock Hudson. And then kind of at the peak of that is The Defiant Ones, where he's literally shackled to Tony Curtis. And at that point, throughout his career in the 50s, he's seen as comparable to the leading man. And then in the 60s, you have his whole other career of him as a leading man in A Raisin in the Sun, and like we were talking about, Lilies of the Field, and then my favorite, A Patch of Blue. And then you have that 1 year, which is spectacular, where he's making the three big movies, To Sir with Love, In the Heat of the Night, and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, all come out in 1967. And then he steps back a bit and he starts becoming a writer, producer, director, and really working more behind the scenes, still starring in his movies, but he's also just taking more of an active role. So you see, this is like a third phase of his career where he's making, you know, he I believe co-produced The Buck and the Preacher with his good friend, Harry Belafonte, who I like to compare them as having parallel careers to each other because they were working at the same time, but they had very different approaches. And he's making his own movies with more intent, but then he starts to step back. And then once we get to the 80s and 90s, his career is much different.
I know you're, you know, what, you know, you're over there in Australia and I'm over here. in Texas and just like, hey, yeah, you're a black man. Can you tell me about another black man? And can, like, I'm trying not to be as racist as I can. I feel you, man. I feel you. I understand. Just, but it's just, listen. I've been thinking about this ever since you hit me up about this. Because I, when it comes to figures like Sidney Poitier, I like, who's been around, you know, for most, you know, who was a big figure in 20th century culture and just, not just African-American culture, but American culture. Like, how did this impact my home when I was growing up? Because usually, you know, just my formative years, you know, kind of, you know, define who I am now. And just seeing how it, you know, what was his influence on, you know, me and my family and my home. Because when I was growing up, grew up in the 80s, and, you know, Sidney Poitier was more in his filmmaking bag. Like, that was funny because, like, I knew he was an actor, but I knew him more as the director of Hanky Panky. Stir Crazy, which was kind of, those, like, that's he's a director, but he's also an actor. But I also know he did, Lilies of the Field and all that stuff. And Sidney Poitier, you know, those films that, you know, that kind of defined who he was as an actor, they weren't as popular in my home as his the trilogy of films he did with a sex offender. We could call it that, because at the time we didn't know Bill Cosby was a sex offender, but that trilogy of films, Uptown Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, A Piece of Action, they were very popular at the Lindsay Homestead.
It's really interesting because at that time, the explosion of black sport. So you see a figure like Sidney almost giving permission, you know, with his huge impact, like giving permission for, like, the industry in a way, like being a trailblazer in the industry in Hollywood, going like, we don't need to just, like, we don't need a blaxploitation. We don't need a special place that you then segregate black people to go and make movies. They can be part of the mainstream Hollywood culture. But then those movies that you're talking about when he's directing is him, to me as an outsider, is going like, oh, I kind of want a piece of the action. I don't necessarily always want to make these sort of stuffy, moralizing films that are coming from a Hollywood lens. I want to make movies for people to enjoy. And so they, you know, he makes westerns, he makes comedies, he picks big stars, and they are kind of hits, like a hell of a lot of hits that he makes at that time, even if they're modest hits, but they're kind of big. So it's really interesting there. And that kind of leads into his a sort of acting and directing hiatus, if you like, for a stint before he reappears.
Well, that was, you know, because the movies I mentioned, and you mentioned westerns, Buck and the Preacher, and another, the reason why they were most popular in my home, because they were the most black. I mean, just all three of those, the Poitier Cosby trilogy, those are like the literally the blackest movies he's ever done.
Yes,
like those, the reason why I didn't know much about, you know, because I didn't grow up watching like Lilies of the Field or The Fine Ones and all, because he was the only black person in that, or coming to dinner and stuff like that. But, you know, Uptown Saturday Night, we're talking about him and Bill Cosby, Harry Belafonte, Richard Pryor, I think Flip Wilson's that one, and then you had Let's Do It Again, where it was like he, you know, Jimmy Walker was a big TV star, so they put him in there, and they had a soundtrack by Curtis Mayfield, and just like, if you were making blaxploitation movies in the 70s, you got to have a soundtrack by Curtis Mayfield. And then you have, you know, A Piece of the Action with him and Bill Cosby and James Earl Jones, the recently departed James Earl Jones.
Yeah, man.
Who there, who they saw each other again in sneakers. So they it's did. Just like, so yeah, these like those movies that he did in the 70s, he realized like, oh, I can just, you know, I can just make, you know, movies, really black movies for a really black audience, and they can still, and they could come out through Warner Brothers or whatever, and that's, you know, just that's like the 70s, people more know him more, you know, for, of course, you know, the Lilies of the Field and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but like the 70s, I believe that was where he was in his blackest bag, let's call it.
Yeah, it feels like in the.
And by the way, if you want that for the title of the episode, go ahead.
We'll be back after this quick break.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I like to think that Sidney Poitier ushered in a whole new wave of talent, because in the 70s, you get Cicely Tyson and Pam Grier, the goddess of blaxploitation, and got Richard Pryor and Billy Dee Williams, Richard Roundtree, who himself also broke the field where it came to representation of black men on screen. And I think going back to your question about what keeps Sidney Poitier sort of relevant to us is the fact that he affected so many changes. He proved in the 50s he was worthy of being a leading man, because look how he could hold his own against the top talent of the era. Then in the 60s, he demonstrated that he could be the leading man and carry a movie almost by himself in some cases. Because if they can hold their own against, you know, somebody pretty big, then that means they have their own star potential, which yes. didn't always pan out. But for Sidney Poitier, it absolutely proved his worth. And over the years, I mean, there has been criticism about him, you know, maybe playing the game a little too nicely, playing some characters that were maybe too appeasing to white audiences. I know that I lean a lot on the film historians who have discussed very much at length his screen representation. I know Donald Bogle says that a lot of his roles had to be sort of sexually withdrawn. Like, there's not as much of a sexual presence. It's more charm and romance. And that was to maybe appease white audiences. But then you also have film historians like Will Haygood, who just talks about how really he was a cultural icon that just really paved the way for this whole new generation. And also depicting the fact that a black man could hold a major Hollywood movie that didn't have to be an all-black cast. It could have these, he could hold his own in a movie that wasn't necessarily a race movie, or race was only part of the movie.
Yeah.
So he has, there has been some critique about how he did it, but what I like to think of is Sidney Poitier worked with the rules while slowly pushing the envelope. And he does that, I think, in the entire decade of the 60s. And then the 70s really kind of explodes, I think, thanks to his work.
Now here's Raquel, Craig, and Lee Zachariah talking about Poitier in Sneakers.
Well, Sneakers was a new to me watch this year, actually. I had never Amazing. Seen it, and I watched it recently and quite enjoyed it. It kind of reminded me a little of 3 Days of the Condor. I know there's a couple of references, especially with Robert Redford's character name from that. It also reminded me of The Net, another great 90s hacking movie.
Raquel, you're talking to a Net fan here right now, folks. Seriously.
I'm sad that I didn't watch this movie around that era, because I watched The Net over and over again, and I feel like this could have been something I watched right along with it. So it is sad that I sort of discovered this later on, but I do love new to me movies, something that, you know, I discovered recently, and now I have like a whole new love for it. I just love the technology. It really harkens back to an older time of, you know, computers and technology, but it still feels very fresh and modern, and the cast is really wonderful, and I just thought it was thoroughly enjoyable, even if I got a little lost in maybe some of the technicalities. But like any good Hitchcock movie with the MacGuffin, does it really matter? You're just along for the ride, and I felt like with this movie I was definitely along for the ride and having a lot of fun with it.
Also, like in watching it again, it's always a crazy, if I may use a crazy mind fuck, watching movies, especially from the early 90s, when just like, oh, you can make you know, thrillers and adventures that were kind of quaint.
Yes.
And just, anyhow, it's a weird thing, because like the whole tone of the movie is like, oh, it's like an action-packed you know, cyber thriller or something, but you don't feel that. It's like it's not in your face. Like there's a lot of like master shots of just people just roaming, like one take shot of people doing shit, and I'm just like, it would be interesting seeing people who are more accustomed to the filmmaking of today with the editing and the. And the you know the dun, 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 dun. I mean, I believe Branford Marsalis is on the score. Like who the hell, like, you're gonna make a cyber killer and Branford Marsalis with his jazzy tones is on the score. And also, like, because okay, you were 8, I was in my junior year of high school. That's how we're talking about here. And I mean, it was 92. So for me, just from my perspective, you know, the thing that I thought, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, yes.
And Malcolm X was going to start a race war. Cause you know, just like in the movie, cause I went to high school. Cause like at the time, you know, the Malcolm X hats and like black kids were like, you know, kind of understood, like, oh, like we're black and we need to do black shit. So I thought like it, like everything was gonna be separated to, you know, Dracula people and black and
Malcolm X
people. And then like the movies came out and then I realized like nobody really gave a shit. it's just like movies were just a thing you did on the weekends. It wasn't about we gotta make this IP number one or whatever. It was just like, hey, this is coming out, want to see it, it's out there. I mean, hopefully, we can, it was shot on because I think Sneaker's Butt was shot on like a 25, 30, 30 million budget.
Yeah, wasn't a big budget.
It made over 100 worldwide. So, yeah, we'll make our money back regardless. So, especially, because at the time it was video and shit. So just like,
yeah,
everybody, that fun time when Hollywood just made movies.
Yeah. And made money.
And had an idea for something, and just like, go ahead. Just like, we'll make money. We'll make our money back somehow. And so, because that's what the thing I got from. Because like Sneakers may be a beloved film for you. But for me, it was just like a movie. It was just a movie that came out, and it happened. And then you saw it on cable every once in a while, and that was pretty much it. But I will say, if I may, because like you brought up the whole idea of the whole thing, just like all these different entities coming in and creating something, especially in terms of Kevin, and just like kind of remind me, like I've always had respect for ensemble films like this, where they did have different characters coming in and do something, and often those type of ensemble films often revolved around people conspiring to do something. I'm just like two of the players in Sneakers, like Robert Redford. Robert Redford did one of my favorite heist movies of all time. Which is the Hot Rock.
Hot Rock, unbelievable Peter Yates movie. Love the yes. Hot Rock.
I love the Hot death. Rock.
Yes.
And just like, and that was kind of like, it was a, you know, that was a kind of heist thriller type of thing, but it was also a comedy with him and George Segal and Ron Liebman and Paul Sand. And kind of like just love that whole sense of just like a bunch of people coming together and just like, does it go well? Does it go off without a hitch? Does it go like there's often these bumps and hurdles along the way? And something in that vein. But also, like, it got me thinking of the film River Phoenix did a couple of years before Sneakers, kind of an underrated Lawrence Kasdan film of mine called I Love You to Death. He started in with the whole idea was that Kevin Kline was this pizza restaurant owner who was a serial philanderer, and his wife Tracy Ullman and his mother-in-law. Have you ever seen I Love You the Best?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago. I remember seeing it on VHS actually, just at home. It was one of those, like, again, when Hollywood made money, you just rent anything that's on the the shelf at the video store.
So it's like his wife Tracy Ullman and his mother-in-law Joan Plowright, Mrs. Laurence Olivier, and River Phoenix, who played a co-worker who had a crush on Tracy Ullman. They conspired to kill Kevin Kline's character, and they hired William Hurt and Keanu Reeves, who played like cousins, like drugged out cousins, to kill them. And the whole thing where they were trying to pull off a murder, and it just wasn't, and just went wrong. So it's just like, it's always interesting when ensemble films like that with different types of people come in, and they get cast, and they get together to do things. And I always like that stuff. You kind of get that now, but it's how so shit like the Avengers.
Yeah, it's
Guardians of the Galaxy. Those are the heist films of the 21st century. Just like they have to be related to IP or comic books or superheroes or whatever else.
So I genuinely think that Sidney Poitier is one of the greatest movie stars of all time. Like, top five. Whoever the other four are, he's top five. He is obviously a great actor, but he possesses so much charisma, and he was such a trailblazer. He was the first Black Best Actor Oscar winner. He had that three for hit in 1967 with To Sir With Love, In the Heat of the Night, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Like, he, like, real dramas, but he's so charming in those. He's so charming in Lilies of the Field, and like, and in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I challenge anyone not to fall in love with him in that film. But like, they're still serious films, and we're not used to seeing him have much fun. Like, think about the comedies he starred in, like Uptown, Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, A Piece of the Action. They're hardly remembered as classics. And given they all star Bill Cosby, they're unlikely to be rediscovered anytime soon. So,
and while being an insanely talented director, he was making huge, broad comedies at the time. And I think, you know, I've heard the phrase comedy doesn't age like wine, it ages like milk. So some of those just don't age well. But at the time, immense comedies, but not necessarily like the classics that you're going to go back to all the time.
Yeah. So the films we remember him for, kind of, even if he's charming and funny in them, they're still the big serious films.
Yes.
And then he 11 years off acting until the like 80s. And so in many ways, Sneakers is the first time a generation got to see him, not just on screen, but in a proper popcorn film, having fun, like Poitier in a fun film. We just don't see it enough. And he's clearly having so much fun here, even beyond the fact that he has one of the greatest voices in history. He's reveling in every single line he gets. Like, you get all the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff. It's, and like, just the best.
The eyepiece. Like, he's having so much fun.
But he also says the most, you know, you talked about, can you guarantee my safety? The line that Sidney Poitier says, there isn't a government on this earth that wouldn't kill us all for that thing. And the way he delivers it, and the way like it hits you in the soul, like someone's poisoned you. You're like, oh my God. That, whenever we talk about Sneakers and the things that resonate, the skeleton key to different codes, like, because ultimately that's what this is, right? It opens every door, but it opens every virtual door. It's like, it is absolutely true. There isn't a government on earth that wouldn't kill everyone that you know if you possess that thing
it's so true. And you believe it. You're like, oh God, they really would. And he sells it so well that you, like, not like the stakes are just so clearly drawn in that line.
Yes.
And it's as much the acting as the writing.
Yes.
I do love the fact that they only really hinted his anger issues once. And it's totally justified. Like, he's beating up bad guy racists. He's gentle with everyone else. He's violent with racists, which pretty much spells out the fact that if he was turfed out of the CIA, like, for anger issues, that kind of suggests the problem was with the CIA. I know this will be a shocking revelation to all of our pro-CIA listeners, but that moment does kind of come out of nowhere, and I think it's sold so well because of the casting. You know, Poitier is, in many ways, the face, or the Hollywood face, of fighting against racism. So you just, I don't know if anyone else could have been in that moment better.
That's the great connection between these two guys. That's one of the heartbeats of the reason that I wanted to talk about this series, to talk about this film in this way, is because there is just something so special about watching the trailblazer of the 1960s and the trailblazer of the 1970s, and ultimately one of the huge faces and trailblazers of the 1980s in a much different sphere in comedies, not handing a baton to each other, but starring in a chorus. It just seems so antithetical to the way that we think about movies. And each of these people bring their own histories with them implicitly to what they're doing. And in a couple of moments in the movie, they just let a crack peer through to this incredible history with these guys and who you know them to be and what our expectations are of them. And I think in those moments, it's not a wink at the camera. It's like pouring petrol onto a fire. Like, it just goes, it's just like, for a quick second, you just feel like you feel a flash and you feel the heat, and you're like, oh God, the calibration of these actors and characters to the people who ultimately almost makes it feel like they were written for them in that respect or tweaked for them, but they just harness that character so well, every single one of them.
So I think if Sidney Poitier had never been in this type of film, we'd be lamenting it. I genuinely believe that. Like, he'd still be considered one of the all-time greats, but you do want to see him let his hair down at least once in a proper classic action comedy heist. This is the perfect surprise in a filmography that is largely and rightly remembered for its grand dramas.
Speaking of grand dramas, here's a final what if from Craig Lindsay, which blew my mind. So I thought it'd be the perfect way to cap off this episode.
Okay, here's something I've never told anyone.
I love this already.
And I'm telling you this right now. Okay, Sneakers came out in September of 1992, right?
Yep.
And like the following spring, Kenneth Branagh did that adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and like on many occasions throughout my life, I've often thought, what if, they switched casts? Because it almost seems like a perfect, like Kenneth Branagh played the Robert Redford part, and Michael Keaton could play the Dan Aykroyd part, and Denzel Washington could play the Sidney Poitier part. And Keanu Reeves could play
the river part. Yeah.
My own private eye. And Emma Thompson, of course, married to Kenneth at the time, could be Mary McDonald. And so just like, and so on and so forth. So I feel like they had an interesting combination of cast between both movies that it could be interchangeable.
But that is fantastic. I've never thought of it, but I love that. I love that.
I do that shit all the time.
I love that.
I watch movies and TV shows and I'll just like, how would this person be in this role and this, and everything. So I've been doing that since I was a kid. So just like when both those movies came out around the same time, I was just like, yeah.
This has been the third episode of Too Many Minutes, a Sneakers podcast. I've been your host, Blake Howard. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to keep following us along, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to check out what's happening on the website, you can go to oneheatminute.com. If you want to reach out to us, email us at mail@oneheatminute.com. And if you want to support us, head on over to patreon.com/oneheatminute and you can get a whole stack of exclusives. One Hot Take, our Patreon exclusive podcast, The Decade Project, months in advance before it comes onto the main feed, and video episodes of our latest mini mega series, which is almost over, Min Hunter. So get along, support us, and you'd be supporting not only this series, not only those series that are live, but next year's series in 2025, Roe Min and the Min Cider. Very special thank you to both Raquel Stecher and Craig Lindsay for being a part of this series. Thank you so much for your time. Links to their great work is in the show notes. And also, so is the work of Lee Zachariah, frequent collaborator over here, friend of the show. All of their great stuff is linked in the show notes and on our site, oneheatminute.com. This has been the third episode of Too Many Minutes. We'll catch you in a week's time with episode 4 on River Phoenix.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.